Hello, I'm John Dutton with KC Cafe Radio. Today I have the distinct honor of talking with music industry specialist Carmen Allgood, owner of her own company, Astral Attractions. Carmen has mentored independent musicians and bands around the world in developing their unique brand. In 1986, she originated the commercial, homegrown, unsigned band radio format, and today she is the producer of several internationally syndicated radio programs that focus on independent music, one of which is called Indie Music Waves that airs here on KC Cafe Radio. She is a conference speaker and has conducted several workshops for independent musicians on the subject of winning radio airplay for their music. Carmen also describes herself as a loveologist and is the author of several articles and blogs on love and happiness. Her latest foray on the subject is the first in a series of books called Beyond Diapers, The Beginner's Guide to Inner Peace. Her first book is subtitled How Not to Wallow in Your Own Poop. It's my pleasure to welcome Carmen Allgood to KC Cafe Radio.
Thank you so much, John. That was quite a mouthful. I'll have to remember all of that and put it on my resume to make myself look a lot smarter than I really am.
I'll send you an email after the interview. How about
that? Thank you. That was very sweet.
Your website, the About Us section of your website, you describe yourself as chief bottle washer and slave to independent music. Tell us how that description comes about through your history.
Ooh, you know, I was just really trying to simplify things, and the fact that I'm really just a one-girl show over here. I just, you know, if it's happening with these programs, I'm responsible for it. So, you know, you can always just blame me. A lot of artists are under the false impression that I have this huge company, you know, with all these interns, et cetera. And it's just not true. I just do everything. Promote the shows, produce the shows, edit the shows, find the copy to, you know, talk about in the shows, listen to all the songs from beginning to end, edit those as necessary, not so much for content, but if you've ever received a lot of independent music or any music at all, you're going to discover that volume levels are really not very consistent across the board. And so if I didn't do that, then the show would go from a soft whisper to a scream, you know, and so we can't have that. It would be very disruptive. So, you know, I do that, and then I do everything I can to possibly promote the show, and then I also syndicate the show, you know, and I really try to give everybody a fair shot and really seriously make an effort to find at least one song by every artist that submits music to air on the programs. Sometimes, very rarely, I might include a song that probably shouldn't be on the show. Either the quality of the product's not really quite ready, or, you know, it's just not there. But I'll manage to filter it through anyway, and somehow or another, even putting in a kind of a substandard song in between a bunch of really great songs seems to elevate the substandard song, so it still comes out sounding okay.
Mm-hmm. So how did you become interested in the topic of independent music? How did you first become exposed to this kind of music?
In the 60s, and boy, I'd be really old. I'd be dead. Let's see. Let's fast track to the 80s. I was working in radio at a commercial rock station, actually a classic rock station at the time, which still sounds exactly the same as they do today, by the way. And I was a late night DJ. I ran the midnight to 6 a.m. shift Monday through Friday. Well, I got to tell you, it's a really weird time to be on the air. It does a lot of things to your biorhythms, get kind of out of sync, and your melatonin is dancing around in your skull, and, you know, it's just different. But I knew a lot of musicians, and I'll just tell you right now, I am not a musician, unfortunately, other than in my heart. And boy, can I play air guitar better than, you know, anybody you've ever seen. It's a really fantastic show, but no one ever gets to see that. But anyway, I just knew a lot of musicians, and I thought, wow, you know, I wonder why these bands don't ever get any airplay. And so the first thing I did was I went out and I got a bunch of sponsors for the show, you know, which I didn't even have a show, but I thought, well, if I bring money into the station, maybe they'll be interested. So I did that, and I'm like, look at all this money, and they would have let me run it, you know, an hour of dead air every night. They didn't care. So I turned all the money over to them, and like a fool, didn't realize I could actually get a commission from this at that time, and started producing these shows about 1986 in Oklahoma City. And I've got to tell you, they were actually dreadful. The music wasn't bad, but, you know, I was playing off of cassettes, scratchy albums. I tried several ways to produce. Like, at the time, we had to use reel-to-reel tape. We didn't have all these really cool digital audio recording or editing devices available to us today. So, you know, here I am, you know, using this. I could have called it the scratchy record hour. But anyway, I just suddenly started getting all this music coming into me. It was at KKLR 97.3 FM in Oklahoma City, and I ran the show at midnight on Saturday or Friday night. And then everybody loved it so much. I mean, half of the DJs in town and all the program directors were listening to the show from all over the city at that time. Of course, I had no idea, but it was a rather dangerous undertaking. And I started getting articles written about the show in California, like Spin Magazine and, you know, other music-related tabloids or magazines were, like, hearing about it. And I just kept it up, you know, crazed fool that I am. And that was my humble beginning with the Homegrown Artist Hour in 1986.
Was it ever a challenge for you to sell radio on the concept of playing independent music?
When I started syndicating, mm-hmm. You mean? Yeah, well, I started syndicating, actually, it was April 15th, 2005, so it's been 6 years. Well, of course. Of course it was horrible, you know. I call a station, don't you want to play a one-hour show with 12 bands that you've never heard of, with 12 songs in a row that you've never heard, all in a row, all at once? Don't you want to do that? You could just feel their eyes glazing over on the telephone. You know, yeah, it was a hard sell, but, you know, I got my first station. And a lot of tenacity is required for this kind of endeavor. I would not recommend this for anybody. And it's the same thing as being an independent musician, you know, trying to get somebody to play your music in a commercial setting. Or non-commercial and public radio is not as difficult. But commercial radio is very set in its ways. And right now, you know, they're experiencing a lot of turmoil in commercial radio, and primarily because they run with national playlists. A lot of their DJs aren't even really there. I mean, they've really wiped out DJs who I believe were a big attraction in radio because, you know, it was like a friend of your. I mean, you developed relationships with people that you were talking to in this invisible realm called, you know, on the air. And so that's really seemed to has injured commercial radio. And so somebody like me is considered a true maverick. And they would get rid of me in a heartbeat if they could find me, but they don't know where I am.
And, of course, you know, we were talking about this briefly before the interview, and that is really what is now being seen as a genuine revolution in the music industry, and that is the Internet. Stations such as KC Cafe Radio and other Internet stations that are now taking that leap to play this kind of music.
Yeah. Well, new music discovery is actually one of the hottest things on the planet right now. And so stations like yours that are breaking the sound barrier, so to speak, are becoming more and more popular. And you're getting very dedicated audiences because, you know, it's not that we don't love all of the old music that we've heard, but there is so much tremendous music, as with all art, you know, from writers to painters to videographers to film producers, that have not really had a fair shake with their creativity because it's been such a closed clique for a long time. And now with the Internet, you know, I mean, there's nobody to stop you. And so, I think that it's really a very remarkably healing thing for the world to allow the average guy or gal off the street to be able to have a creative output and a platform for themselves to be able to express themselves. Mm-hmm. And whether you're a blogger or want to produce a podcast once a month or twice a year, I mean, you can find an audience. You can find people who relate to you, who are interested in your topic or area of expertise. or your art or your music. And so really it's a very miraculous thing for the world at large, in my humble opinion.
Mm-hmm. And of course, there's two sides to the coin. One, the fact that you just mentioned that, you know, the ability to produce music is a lot easier for the smaller musician now, who can put some recording software on a computer and get a nice microphone and some editing software and put together an album, where, you know, in the past you had to walk into a recording studio and pay thousands of dollars just to produce a single album.
Hundreds of thousands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The I guess a flip side to that is the fact that that also means that there's a lot more competition out there for the musician. There's a lot more content floating around. I don't know if I'd call it noise, so to speak, but there's a lot more to compete with now, isn't there?
You know, I haven't been on MySpace for a while because I lost my password, and every time I email them and say, need my password resent, they say, log in and we'll send it to you. So I can't get, but you know, a couple of years ago when they were number one in the world as far as websites for visitors, which they were for quite some time, you know, at the time, my belief was that there were about 10 million unsigned band profiles just on MySpace. And so if you say four or five artists per band, you know, 40 to 50 million independent artists just on MySpace. So now you look at all the other platforms that are available for these bands to reach out and try to get, you know, like CD Baby to Reverb Nation, you know, of course, Facebook and all the social networking sites, and the ability to promote themselves if they have any marketing skills at all. And, you know, there's no one there to stop them. So, yes, it just goes to show you, John, that everybody is super creative. I mean, I don't think any of us are special. I think it just boils down to how much are you willing to pursue your passion, and is money going to be the deciding factor as to whether or not you're going to do it? Because it is, that was true, most of us wouldn't be creative at all, obviously. From your radio station to my radio show to the 70,000 other internet radio stations to the, I'm going to say, hundreds of millions of bands that are out there that are now in a position to create and distribute their music, you know, for really very little financial investment. And so I think it's just a really cool thing. I mean, you have to be doing this because you love it, number one, and it makes you happy, number two, which are the same thing to me. And then you have the absolute ability to share that with as many people, like YouTube. Look at YouTube. Who would have figured and believed that was possible? I mean, you look at this stuff and these grainy videos, and everything is really, you know, poor quality, or a band will just stick the cover of their CD up there and let it hang for the entire song, and nobody cares. Like, do-it-yourself is really popular. And then you got somebody like iTunes, which is just this monstrous platform for all kinds of creative people. And, you know, I lost my iTunes account about a year and a half ago, I'll make a long story short. And I would highly recommend that everybody pay attention in class about this, because I let somebody else host my podcast. Well, I three different times I lost everything, all of my work, all of my platforms, all the podcast directories, because they would change one thing on the podcast directory. And so everything would vanish, and I just got so fed up. I'm not going to, you know, do this again. It's just too heartbreaking. Well, somebody was nagging at me, you're not on iTunes. I'm like, you're right. So I went through the motion at the end of December, and through the month of January, and those last 2 days in December, I had over 10,000 new subscribers to my Colorado Wave.
Wow.
In 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in the last 4 months now, I've had close to 30,000 new subscribers just to my little one-hour weekly show, which has absolutely blown my mind. I thought, oh, I'll get a couple of hundred. And I was just watching that thing, because now I was hosting it all of a sudden, so I could finally track it. And so I think it's really important that you, you know, like you were telling me about the new software program that you're using through WordPress for your podcasting,
mm-hmm.
you know, for KC Cafe Radio. You know, it's really critical that you be able to track your own movement through the world as far as interests for blogging or sending out your music or developing a podcast. So I learned my lesson about that, and I would highly recommend that everybody stay in control of their own content. You know, it's not to say that, you know, 50 directories that are not going to send out spiders, and they literally steal the content and put it on their own directories, which is kind of cool. I don't know if there's an infringement going on there, but, you know, it increases your visibility. But it would be nice if you knew who they were. So every once in a while, you should stop and Google yourself or the name of your shows or whatever you do and find out who the heck has picked it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Keeping track. And you know, which actually, you know, is quite a daunting task to do when you start thinking about the amount of research and you can spend quite a bit of time doing something like that. So what do you recommend to artists? You've given quite a bit of advice already, but in a nutshell, what kind of things do you advise the artists that you talk to and mentor? What do you advise them specifically in terms of being able to compete in this world, especially artists who are producing and distributing their own content?
Well,
how do they do that?
Couple of things. First of all, this should almost go without saying that I personally do not believe that music should be offensive. And music is a source of hope and inspiration for people. And so, if you're going to use four-letter words that are not L-O-V-E, love, you know, you're not going to get nearly as much mileage as if the product is clean. This is going to apply primarily for terrestrial stations because there are still laws enacted that, you know, will censor your music. And why would you spend all that time and money so that you can drop the F-bomb or the S-bomb once in a song? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me. And so, you know, I do address that, especially with the younger artists, and we're all for freedom of speech. It's not to deny that human right to anybody, but I'm not up for fighting City Hall. And quite frankly, you know, if you want to make a serious run with your music, then you are still going to need terrestrial radio because it is still king of the road. As much as we love the internet and everything, terrestrial radio still garners a very, very huge audience. And it adds muscle to the credibility of your product if you can get on terrestrial radio. What I mean by that is AM or FM radio stations, which might sound old hat. But until another 10 or 15 years comes around, we're not really going to know what's happening with these towers, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of speculation, but, you know, it hasn't seemed to budge all that much. And so while people are still going to be using the internet to find new material because it's, quite frankly, FM radio is not very liberated when it comes to testing the waters with unheard of music, which is kind of crazy because at one time every song was new, you know, all of them. So that doesn't hold with me, but it does with them. And so since it's their business, you know, and they haven't hired me, they're not willing to pay me about $1,000 an hour to tell them this. I'll make that our secret, John, but you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But mainly, I would keep your songs clean. If you want to have and it's called radio edit. That if somebody says radio edit only, what that means is, you know, they don't want those words. You probably don't really want them running through your station, do you?
We try to avoid it.
Right. I mean,
we try to avoid it. Sometimes, yeah. I have to admit, we've had a few slip through. And when we do, you know, we have a discussion amongst ourselves,
right,
as to whether we want to continue playing that particular song. So, yes, you're correct about that.
And, you know, it's
I had an email exchange with our music director just this week about that very subject, actually.
You know, I mean, it's so much easier to avoid offending anybody than it is to offend one person and have to crawl through broken glass to apologize. Mm-hmm. And so for the bands, because we turn to music for healing, we turn to music for, you know, healing the separation and the problems in our world. And so why not keep it as loving as possible? I know there's a lot of really angry music right now, which is reflective of a younger generation. And, you know, a lot of it's called rap, hip-hop, but there's, you know, to be fair, there's quite a bit of it that's also very loving and enlightened.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we can't just clamp down on that one format, you know, and music from the 60s and 70s was highly political, you know, so there was always a political slant to that. But, you know, nobody thought about trying to get away with the language that I hear in some of this music. And, you know, if you send something like that to me, it's simply not going to get on my show. I mean, if it's got one word in there and I know I can't put it on an FM signal, then I will edit it out and try to smooth it through that point as much as if I like the song.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, I just...
And that's a lot of work on your part, too.
Well, of course it is.
Yeah.
And then I pray that I really got all of it, you know. I mean, as I release the show and let it go out, I mean, I've had to crawl back a couple of times and go, oops, you know, I got to change this track one for you guys. There's a glitch in there, and that's how I usually refer to it. And I'm sure they're chuckling, but they trust me. You know, they know I'm not going to try to injure. The penalties for using words that the FCC frowns upon are really very enormous, and they can shut radio stations down. They could fine me $25,000 to $100,000. They could fine the station. I mean, it could just go on. It's just not worth our while. But primarily for the band, you know, to answer that question again, language. The second thing I would talk to them about is the length of the song. You know, if you can keep it at 4 minutes or just a little bit less, you've got a much better shot at getting your music on the air. If you get into 7 or 8 minute jams, forget it. You know, nobody wants to play songs that long.
Yeah. Well, and you know, one of the things that was crossing my mind when you were talking about the language issue in music, from a marketing standpoint, that sort of dates the music as well. Because when you start talking about angry songs, you're usually talking about a song that is angry at some kind of current event. And we've had a few of these songs that we play on the station that talk about previous presidential administrations, for example.
Political. Yeah, they're political.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes you hear those songs and you think, well, that's all in the past now. And you don't really want your music to become a thing of the past, do you?
Well, I don't know, because I play an awful lot of songs that I've had around for years, some of them 10 or 15 years, that I think, you know, if you have a hit song, it's timeless. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that's a third thing. I'm glad you brought that up. Bands are really concerned about when they wrote the song, when they went into the studio and recorded the song, when they released the song, and they're going, well, wow, it was 3 years ago. I'm like, don't worry about it. You know, time is just simply an illusion when it comes to music. If you have hit material and you should ever get to a point where you suddenly have a one-hit wonder, it might have actually been a song that you wrote 20 years ago. So time is irrelevant, other than feeling the pressure of, wow, time is going by. But as far as the music and the song goes, no, I think that, you know, if you've got a great song, it will be great forever.
Mm-hmm. And this is probably a good segue into the other subject that we want to talk about. That's your new book, Beyond Diapers, Beginner's Guide to Inner Peace. Now, how do you go from someone that is heavily involved in the music industry to something like this? Is this sort of a parallel thing, or is this something that has come out of your experience with music?
I'd have to say both.
Mm-hmm.
That to me, you know, you've heard that expression, music is love. You know, that was from, you know, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, one of their songs. I believe Stephen Stills coined that phrase and wrote that song, music is love. And I think most people would agree with that because of the joy that we experience when, I mean, we can be just bummed out of our mind. And if we turn on the radio or play an album that we love and this one song comes up and it just makes you feel so much better instantly. It's just kind of a mystical, magical, miraculous experience, quite frankly. I'm not really a writer. I'll be the first to admit I'm much more comfortable with spoken word. And in fact, my punctuation is just pitiful. I was out of school the day we went over that part. My spelling is decent, and thanks to spell check, it can be excellent nowadays. But it was just... I've been studying the energy of love since I was, you know, let's say about 25, 30 years old, you know, somewhere in that bracket. And it's quite an interesting study. And, of course, we're dealing with an invisible entity. You can't really see love. You can experience it And a lot of us have certainly seem to have been devastated by the power of love. But from looking at, you know, nature, from looking at relationships, from looking at our behavior, and so many other, for history, art, music, you know, the human condition, and everything that we have experienced in our life, I would highly recommend that people look at love in a completely different light. And, you know, recognize that, number one, everybody truly has love, whether we behave that way or not, that this means that there's a source of love. And so trying to trace back through time, evolution, history, the Bible, all the Quran, and all of the other religious factions in the world, and, you know, this full-blown recognition, wow, you know, it's so enormous. And so then what do you do with it? Because most of us equate it with pain, and which is unfortunate, because love is completely powerful because of its gentleness. And so all of the pain is caused by us. You know, we do that to ourselves, and primarily it's caused by refusing to love. All of it, all of the problems in the world can be traced back to our refusal to love one another. And all of the masters that have walked the face of the earth, you know, from Buddha to Jesus Christ to Krishna, have all said the same thing: love one another. You know, they say, it's not so much don't do this, but try this one thing. If you will try this one thing, you know, then you will heal the world and yourself. So it's all about healing. The Beginner's Guide to Inner Peace, Beyond Diapers, of course, is a metaphor. And it's tongue-in-cheek, and some people would be offended by it. I think the vast majority of the people that saw it just simply laugh, because we can all relate. You know, boy, I had a temper tantrum. You know, which can happen at any age, at any space and time, for no reason or some reason. You know, we can just twist off and, you know, really put ourselves into a big, bad diaper. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know if I answered your question, but so far.
Well,
so good.
You sort of answered one of the questions I was going to ask is the connection. How did you make the connection between the subject of love, which is the real subject of your book, and diapers, which is in the title of your book? How did you end up putting those two together?
Because if it ain't love, it's a cry for love. Quite frankly and simply, that's exactly it. Mm-hmm. You know, because there's only two things that you can experience or see in the world, and that's love or a call for help. You know, I mean, so that simplifies our desire for salvation, and everybody in the world eventually is going to be want to be saved. You know, so now the question is, well, what can we save? Well, salvation is simply for the mind, and it's attained through peace. Mm-hmm. And until you get to that state, you know, everything else, all bets are off, you know. So we have this tendency to blame other people and to guilt trip other people for the way we feel. And so it's all about self-responsibility, being responsible for what you think. Mm-hmm. And so peace of mind is quite literal. It has nothing to do with the body. It's simply a state of mind. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that pure peace and joy and happiness and the awareness of our eternal nature are all things that are inherent in our thought system. But they are buried beneath this thing we call grievances. And grievances, another word for that is grieving, being angry, mad, madness. And so when you hold grievances, it literally makes you insane. Well, fortunately for us, there's a way out, and it's something we call forgiveness. And so that's another thing. You know, diapers is not just about love. It's about forgiving so that you can remember love.
It's really more about what you contribute than it is what you get out of life, isn't it?
Correct. Well, you know, it's twofold. I mean, you cannot give something unless you've been willing to receive it first. This is just a fact. This is a law of nature. And so what are you going to give? Are you going to offer grievances? If you do, you're going to be grieving. Are you going to offer forgiveness? If you have, then you're willing to make room for peace in your mind again. And so it's really the ultimate gift to yourself, so that, you know, you can free yourself from this cycle of being unhappy, holding grievances, fear. Fear is the underlying cause of all of it. The fear that you're going to be deprived of love, which in reality is impossible. And because we didn't create ourselves, you know, we're really lucky in this respect. Now it's just become a question of remembering and undoing unloving thoughts. So whether you're a Christian or a Jewish or Buddhist or no religion, atheist, agnostic, whatever, you know, everybody is still going to look for an answer to what our reality is. That's what every search in the world revolves around, is who and what are we?
Mm-hmm.
And on my website, you know, I've got all my Colorado Wave and Indie Music Wave and all of the, you know, information about the music that I play, which is very loving, by the way. And then I also have a page on there called Beyond Diapers. And this is about my little book. And you can read excerpts and a few chapter summaries, the chapter titles, see the picture of the cover, which is kind of funny. And, you know, I have happiness tips that I send out. You know, I do that blog for Women's Radio. Once a week, I write an article on love and happiness. And on there, I also have a show that you can listen to on demand. It's called The Source of Love. And it's pretty intense, and it's cut into 8 segments. They're like, you know, 6 to 8 minutes long. So you can listen to the 8 segments for, you know, 5-6 minutes and then come back later. But anyway, you would go to beyonddiapers.info. I bought the info because somebody else bought the .com and wanted to sell it to me for like $5 million. And I said, wow. Yeah, you can keep it. And then I bought, you know, beyonddiapers.info for $1.99. And it's like, that's it.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot. I mean, I'm not the only person in the world searching for truth. Everybody wants to know, because being in doubt and conflict is very uncomfortable. Being uncertain leaves you with a lot of fear. And if there's a way out, we certainly want to know what it is. And Beyond Diapers is really, you know, it's just baby steps that anybody can take, and no one can prevent you from doing it, on how to be happy and at peace. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's really all about, with some humor. And it's actually pretty hard-hitting, but, you know, there's a lot of humor in there. And the metaphor, of course, is outrageously ridiculous. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a great reminder, I think, of, you know, of the roots of what life is all about, in a way. And it begs the question, since both of us work in media, and, you know, media is... sort of the thing that we talk about quite a bit in the music that we work with. But how much do you think the media has been responsible for sort of losing that identity of happiness and love that you talk about in your books? Do you see a lot of pressure in our world?
I think it's really unfortunate, because media is so powerful. But quite frankly, it's so new to us, we still don't know what to do with it, and that's why there's so much garbage out there. And there's so much fear presented to us. The headline in the news is dreadful. You know, you watch the news on TV, I personally find it pornographic. And this is presented to us as our reality, and our children have no hope because of all the ugliness. So yeah, I think that the media is completely irresponsible, quite frankly. And they could be teaching much more wholesome, happy, healthy. Most of the people in the world are not bad people, John. I mean, most of us are just simply trying to live our lives as, you know, peacefully as possible, raise our children in an environment where we feel safe sending them to school and not worried that somebody's going to bring a gun and blow them away that day. You know, I mean, I think most people, it's like Sting said, I hope the Russians love their children too. You know, I mean, we seem attracted to all of the violence in the world, but it's probably just a big distraction and makes us feel a little bit better that our own lives are not that, you know, Friday 13th stuff. But I think that the media should really step up to the plate, swing batter, and have much more loving lessons to present to the world, and maybe talk about some of the great things that are going on rather than, you know, trying to dig around finding the most horrible story of the day. Mm-hmm. You know, but that's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Beyond Diapers, How Not to Wallow in Your Own Poop, that's the first in a series, is that correct, or do you plan more books along these lines?
Well, I mentioned earlier I'm not really a writer, and this one just kind of, actually I wrote this book in 1999, and in about 10 days. And I sent it out to a couple of publishers, and I knew, boy, I'm going to get shot down really fast. And sure enough, my self-fulfilling prophecy, it's like, thanks, but no thanks. You are too weird for words. But it's about love, you know. Then eventually, I guess last year, I thought, you know, I actually forgot about it for several years, to be honest with you. And then I, you know, was looking through my stuff and went, oh, wow, here's my book, you know. So you can self-publish like an independent artist. I'm an independent author. It's very difficult to promote, of course. I've had a few sales on Amazon and I've sold some copies of, you know, I've got a little paperback. It's only, you know, 54 chapters, but each chapter is only about a paragraph long. How stupid is that, you know? But I've had some really good feedback from people that have bought the book, you know, from Canada and England and all over the United States that are really amazed. And one guy bought it, and, you know, after a couple of weeks, I emailed him. I said, well, what do you think about the stupid book? And he said, well, it's really kind of stupid. And I'm like, well, thank you. Can't please everybody. So anyway, a couple of weeks later, he emails me. He says, well, I've been reading your book forward and backward and forward and backward, and he couldn't quit reading it all of a sudden. So he really ended up loving the book. So this guy's like 10 million times smarter than me. So, you know, I'm like, really? He goes, yeah, I read it all the way through. You can read it in about an hour, maybe 45 minutes, you know. And then he'd start at the back and read from the back page to the front page. I'm like, well, that's a different way of reading a book. What other kind of a book could you do that with? But then he wrote a really sweet, just a little sentence about the book for me, you know, and so I posted that on my website.
If there's a volume two to this book, what would it be subtitled? Have you thought about that?
Well, I think the next one would either be More on Love, that's M-O-R-O-N, More on Love, or When Good Women Go Bad.
The book is called Beyond Diapers, The Beginner's Guide to Inner Peace, How Not to Wallow in Your Own Poop. You can find it on Carmen's website. That's beyonddiapers.info. And if you would like to buy the book, it's $12.95 plus $3 shipping and handling. And you include a CD with that as well.
Yes.
Tell us about the CD.
Oh, the Love Album. It was another project of mine in the mid 2000 or some 2003 maybe four that I was doing for the Food Bank of the Rockies, and it's just really great songs about love. I mean, it's pretty much a rock and roll album, but I overordered, and now I've still got a couple of cases. So for the time being, I will send a love album along with the book, which anybody that's, you know, between their 20s to 80s is going to love this CD, and then I send a buck to the Food Bank of the Rockies, which doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know, it all adds up. And they're an extension of, I think it's called Great Harvest, which is a nationwide food bank resource, and then the Food Bank of the Rockies covers, you know, it's like a regional, and they, just in Colorado, I believe they provide food for about 70 smaller food banks, you know, up and down east and west and north and south in Colorado. So that, you know, there's an awful lot of people that I read, this is horrifying to me, that one out of four kids in the United States is now involved in a food stamp program. And so it just shows you, you know, how our economy is tanked. World hunger has always been a really big issue for me. I know today that about, 1 billion people will not have one scrap of food today. And the thought of trying to tackle that problem is enormous. You know, what can one person do? I don't know. All we can do is our little bit and, you know, hope that there's a ripple effect and that if enough people do it, you know, then someday we'll not have these programs anymore. I would love to put the Food Bank of the Rockies out of business, quite frankly, but I don't think it will happen in my lifetime.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. All the musicians on the CD are independent artists, right?
Well, this one was, they were all from Colorado.
They were all from Colorado.
Yeah. Okay. So I got licensing agreement with them, and we ended up selling it through Borders Books, Borders and Music Video, you know, the big chain here in Colorado, and Wild Oats Food Stores, and a bunch of banks picked it up and, you know, helped us distribute those and sell them. And when I say banks, I mean financial institutions and, you know, private record stores and companies, and then, you know, I mean, it was a fairly successful program. One thing I have learned, and I would never recommend again to anybody, to produce a compilation CD by especially unknown artists and try to sell it. So save your money. That was a very, it was a huge amount of work, and not that big of a return. I mean, the food bank got some money, but not nearly as much as we hoped for. And then I've watched a lot of other people try to do this with unsigned bands. All you can really do, these are promotional items. You just produce them and give them away. You can't sell them. And they're really even hard to give away. Look at all the free music that's available mm-hmm. for download now. And people just don't want it. They've got so much. So, you know, trying to do the compilations with a bunch of famous bands is just as difficult if you try to sell them. You know, for some reason, you know, people are really into the single music digital download for 99 cents now, which I think is mm-hmm. very cool.
So. Yeah, yeah. Back to that revolution of the music industry. Your show on KC Cafe Radio is called Indie Music Wave. The website to that show, if folks want to check it out directly, is indiemusicwave.com. The show airs at 1 o'clock Saturday afternoons and 6 a.m. Sunday mornings Eastern Time here on KC Cafe Radio. Musicians who want to get on the show, what do they do?
They can go to the website, indiemusicwave.com. I have several domain names that all go to the same site, so you land there and you'll see something that says Worldwide Waves. Then music submission guidelines are on my Band and ProBiz page, and I charge a small fee that is not to be confused with payola. But I had to quit accepting CDs about 3 years ago. you know, as one-man operator, you know, the number of CDs I was getting was just unbelievable, and I just couldn't do it anymore. So, you know, it was ruining my life. It was ruining my home. I couldn't find anything. They were cracked. They were broken. They wouldn't get here. So, you know, since everything is online, you know, I started doing music uploads as MP3. I just love it. Boy, you send that to me, I get it instantly. I have notification instantly. I usually get you on a show really within a couple of weeks. You know, I can contact you because you're already built into my website as far as your email address. I mean, it's really so much faster. And it's actually a lot cheaper than trying to mail me a disc. You know, you can keep the CD and sell it. You got $10 there, the packaging and everything. I mean, you can spend, you know, the total cost of the package would be $12 to $15. And you can send five songs for $10. You know, I mean, to me, that's a dream come true, and it actually slows down the music submission because they'd rather pay the post office than me. Mm-hmm. It's just fine. But, you know, the it also keeps maybe the artists that aren't quite ready, you know, from sending me their music yet. And, you know, but it just makes it really affordable, very fast, 100%, you know, it gets to me. And it's already installed on my computers and into my database, and you can write a little bio on there, so I'll have information about you, plus your contact. I always contact the bands and tell them you're going to be on the show this week, you know, especially if it's a first-time artist, you know, we're so proud to have you on our show, something like that, and thank you for your submission, and so that's how you do that, yeah.
Have you had any specific response in terms of the impact that airplay on your show has gotten artists?
Oh, yeah, all the time. You know, I mean, sometimes they don't necessarily contact me directly, but every once in a while they'll, you know, I'll see something like, you know, on their Facebook, wow, we got emails from Kuwait and, you know, Argentina because we were in Italy because we were on this show. And, you know, I would like to take the credit for it. I can't really prove that, but in their mind it's true because they know that I was the only person that played their music ever, so they don't know where else anybody would hear it. And you know, people tell me yes, they sell CDs. Some people get licensing deals. Yeah, I've had people contact me and say, wow, I really love that song and I want to contact that band, how do I do it? And then I hook them up and get out of the way, you know. And they might want to do something like include their song on their website, and they're willing to pay them for it so they can have this real good cool theme music or whatever, you know. I mean, yeah, so it really does benefit the bands, probably a lot more than any of us could ever guess. So yeah, that feels good, knowing that something good has happened for somebody about, you know, that's been on the shows.
Yeah. Well, Carmen Allgood, we appreciate your time with us this afternoon to talk about your new book. Again, it's called Beyond Diapers, The Beginner's Guide to Inner Peace, How Not to Wallow in Your Own Poop. Beyonddiapers.info is the website where you can learn more about Carmen and the book, and you can also purchase right there online. IndieMusicWave.com is the website for your show, and we look forward to hearing you every weekend here on KC Cafe. Carmen, thank you for spending this time with us.
Oh, John, thank you, and thanks from all the musicians and me, you know, for all of the work that you do to help support independent artists as well. Thank you so much.